In 3, 2, 1.
There are 5 generations of buyers in today's competitive marketplace and about 19 communication channels. So whether you're looking to maximize revenue to grow your company, boost engagement and awareness, increase repeat customers, or encourage brand loyalty, my guest today can help. Standing out from the crowd and getting your message heard is always a challenge. Employing email and SMS marketing remain potent tools for engaging with customers. By implementing best practices such as personalization, mobile optimization, and clear CTAs, while avoiding overwhelming frequency and generic content, you can harness the power of these channels to drive meaningful results in your marketing efforts. To help us understand how to use these tools effectively is an award-winning marketing expert and CEO of Inbox Army, Scott Cohen. Well, hi, Scott. Welcome to the program. We're delighted to have you.
Thanks, Michael. Great to be here.
Now, where are we speaking to you from today, Scott?
I am in, today it is beautiful, Salt Lake City. The sun is out. I played golf yesterday. I'm feeling good.
Well, if you're golfing, you're doing good. But we're going to be talking about marketing, email, SMS marketing. You've got a varied, extensive career. I think it's 20 years you've been doing this now, and you're an award winner. You know how this works since probably its inception. I remember when we used to fax out things. So when I started our marketing, everything was a fax, and we would just send out fax. We didn't have email. That just was not a thing. And then it evolved into email. And of course, then it evolved into other mediums over that with social media. That was at the very beginning stages of that. How did you get here though? Let's start back at the beginning. So you're going through high school. I know you were out east. You went to college in Virginia.
And I did.
Hey, I'm going to go into marketing. How did you get to where you are today?
Oh my goodness. Back to the beginning. Well, actually, I originally went to college as a music major. My vision at the time was to be a high school band director. That's what I was going to be. And first semester of college decided I wanted to enjoy school and changed out because the music program, I went to James Madison University, the music program there is great, but you live in one building and I just needed variety in my life, right? I just needed to be different. And I thought about it and I went, what did I like doing in high school that wasn't music? And I'm a bit of a nerd. My brother and I and friends, we would make movies, just go out and make movies, write our own scripts, do all this stuff like that, you know, and usually it was something, some sort of hybrid with Star Wars. So it was like Star Wars. We did a Star Wars Highlander. It was more fun to just shoot it and have all the bloopers and everything else, right? But I thought, what can I do? What do I also really enjoy? And one of the freakish things, and if my wife were in the room, she'd be sitting here nodding her head along with this, and my kids too. I've always had a knack for remembering movie lines and like lines from ads and things like that. So I thought, why don't I go do advertising? Why don't I get into advertising? I wanted to be a copywriter. And so that's really what I did is I found a program at JMU, is in their School of Media Arts and Design and Corporate Communications. I call it the closest I could get to advertising without being a business major because I didn't want to do finance. I didn't want to do accounting or all those things. I just wanted to focus on communication and all those fun things. And you mentioned fax earlier. Like one of the courses was literally like news production where everybody had a role where you're operating old school like beta cameras and all these things like that. You had to operate the teleprompter. That was one of the roles. So it was a lot of fun. I graduated in 2005. So I'm old enough to remember faxes and things of that sort. But my career started as a copywriter. I found an ad agency that was based in town in Harrisonburg, Virginia, where they had a built-in production crew too. So I got to go out and do video shoots and write TV scripts. Radio scripts. At one point, I think I was writing up to 10 scripts a day with a stopwatch and everything, working with the voiceover artist through email or calling them and going, hey, could you send this over? And we had to figure out how to file share back in 2005, 2006, when sometimes they literally would send you remember zip drives? They would send you a zip drive with an audio file. We're going way back. And so I did that for a little while, then moved out here to Utah the first time and started working for Western Governors University, the online university, as a copywriter, writing everything, you know, website, print, you name it, even writing the newsletters. And one day, it's about, I don't know, late 2008, my boss comes to me one day and goes, hey, you're writing those emails. Why don't you do them? I went, okay, sure. Why not? Let's learn a new thing. And that launched my career, really, is really what it did. I still think it's the perfect combination of art and science, right? Where you have the limitations of what email can send and the art. And sometimes it's not art, it's plain text because it has to stand out a little bit or whatever it might be. And then you have the science of did it work? And you can actually see what worked. Because when I wrote TV and radio ads, this was pre-CTV. This was pre, you were lucky to get Nielsen ratings in the Shenandoah Valley, right? You weren't going to get Nielsen ratings. So it was really, the only way you heard about it was if somebody went, oh, I saw this cool local ad. Oh yeah. And stuff like that. So it's always appealed to me. And really since late 2008, 2009, email has been part of or all of my job. So it's been a wild ride.
You're obviously a right brainer. And if you got the music, you don't understand logic, you understand reason. With music, there's a formula to it, right? It's math. Yep. So that fits the whole nerd thing, right? So you understand notes and music and what goes together, what doesn't. And I think those are good. That's great training because really you're a songwriter, but you just do it in your emails. So
I'm going to steal that. That's good.
I think it's what a natural transition. Well, it's funny you say that because we and I have a very similar background. Actually, I started in radio and I always had a face for radio. I had a baby face. I wanted to get into television. So then I ended up directing news for an NBC affiliate. And I did that for a couple of years and kind of like a part-time gig, the new news. And back then we're talking late 70s, early 80s. The technology just was, we used slide projectors for graphics, but the writing process. So I think that's a big part of it because a lot of people don't feel creative with emails and a lot of emails are boring, but we're going to dive all into that. I can see where that's a nice natural fit for you and a nice extension of your music. And of course I can see some of your music library and your instruments behind you there. Your man cave looks good. Well, let's talk about email marketing and SMS marketing, where things are. And let's talk overall big picture, first of all, how everything kind of fits in. Pre-pandemic and post-pandemic, things changed. We noticed a lot of changes. What did you notice the most significant changes when it comes to marketing? And it doesn't have to be limited to our email, but just in general, or the approach to marketing from the time before the pandemic and how the pandemic maybe accelerated things or leveraged things. What's your take on that?
It put email back on the map. Is really what COVID did. I mean, if you remember the first couple of months where everybody and their mom was coming out going, this is what we're doing during COVID. And you'd look at that and go, I don't remember ever signing up for that email, but it seemed like everybody had their COVID response email, right? And at the time I was working at Purple, the mattress company, and you went from a business that was full, like mostly reliant on wholesalers and in-person purchases to e-commerce. And so it not only, not that e-commerce wasn't becoming a thing, but it super launched its trajectory, right? That's really what COVID did to e-commerce. And as a result, email, because how do you get receipts? How do you talk to these people? You know, they're signing up for email, they're in their home. So email really became, like I said, it's been around. I mean, people have been calling email dead since I started an email, and that was in 2009. So clearly not dead, still really effective, incredibly effective, still cost effective comparatively to other channels, including SMS, but also plays a critical role in that customer relationship and just keeping it warm that other channels really don't. Or if they do, it's incredibly costly. I can't imagine someone using Facebook ads to keep people warm, to nurture that relationship, just to keep that brand top of mind, right? Paid social and those are great for acquisition. It's getting you in front of people. Then you want to get them on your list. And then you want to be able to email them. The people that sign up for SMS and email are more likely to convert overall, right? Because if you're signing up, yes, I wanted to receive text messages. It's incredibly invasive on your time, right? Email, it's asynchronous. You can leave it alone. You can turn off you could turn off notifications for SMS, but nobody does. And so you just have to recognize that email is going to be there for when people are ready to engage with it. Whereas SMS, it's like it's in your face. If you're anything like me, I'm a bubble zero guy. Like I don't like notifications. I got to clear them out. And SMS is one of those things I got to clear out.
So how have you seen email evolve? I see mixed messages all the time. Matter of fact, in your experience working with brand side marketers and agencies, what are some of the common misconceptions about email and SMS marketing that you've encountered and how are you addressing them?
I think the biggest one, and this has been true forever, is that email is easy. And the issue is that it's not hard to send out an email, but it is hard to do email well.
Right.
But bad email also can convert. So getting people to understand the value of, you know, we talked before the show of like big into messaging, like getting the messaging across in a way that is digestible for people to understand, for the rare people that actually want to read, but scannable to where you get to the point where you can drive people to your website and maintain that value so people don't leave is really, really hard. Email should not be treated as a churn and burn channel. And I think that's a piece that, especially for folks in the US who want to, I call, cheat the system and go out and buy a list of email addresses, that's not there's a host of issues as to why that's a bad idea long term. You may get lucky and get some short term revenue. You may. We at Inbox Army, we don't work with those folks because oftentimes, outside of maybe getting lucky in that first week, the long-term ramifications are just awful. So the education piece of getting people to understand that email is not a churn and burn, it's slow, steady, think a tortoise and the hare. You know, you want to be the tortoise, so you got to be slow and steady and build up and just get there, right?
It You're takes building time a relationship, to, moving it from
transaction. Exactly. And I would say the other misconception I want to add in is that odds are you're not sending enough email. Because I have this old adage in my head for my advertising agency days of, by the time you get sick of it as an ad professional, somebody's finally seeing it. And email can act in that way of, people are not going to open every single email you send. Even your best customers are not going to open every email you send. But being there in the inbox consistently with value drives branding. You know, a great example I had a few lives ago, I ran a report with my data team that said, give me everybody we sent an email to last week and show me conversion within 48 hours from any last touch channel and by whether they opened or clicked. Opened or didn't open the email. This is years ago when opens were more reliable. 40% of the revenue that came in from those customers came from people who didn't open the email.
What you're saying, I think, is really powerful. When we were back to the faxes, we're sending out faxes. I used to tell everyone, I don't care if you read the fax. I don't care if you read my email. I don't care if you read the notification. The damage is done when you see my name from a branding point of view in your inbox. And then you know that I'm here, I'm not going away. And you've got billions of messages coming at us from millions a day, right? That we're exposed to. What are we going to focus on? So it's being there, which brings up the question of cadence. Like, how often should we be? Like, I believe in the concept of what we call being professionally persistent, right?
Yep.
And delivering value at each time. But then how long should these emails be? Like, I've seen things that are just long sales letters. Sometimes I'll read them because I want to see how good they are. I love seeing good emails come in that are, well, how did it get my attention? Was it the subject line that got me? How far did I go before I quit and moved away? So I'm looking at that kind of structure. I've heard things where 120 words or less, you know, structure your email, keep them short and sweet. Any rules? Does Scott Cohen have any rules on, hey, do this, don't do that?
Any good email marketer will tell you to test it. For one thing, you can test anything. Think about how you engage with your inbox. You are more likely to open an email from somebody you know, right? So consistency in who an email is from, at least for a while, you can test some other names. But the companies that do like X name from the company, and odds are if you're in mobile or even on desktop, you may cut off the from so you don't know who it's from and it's a different name every time. Hopefully they've tested that to where it's successful. But odds are, I don't know who you are. So how am I going to respond to that, right? Why should I open that? To your point, we get a lot of email. Why should I open something like that? Subject lines, again, generally shorter is better, but test it, right? You could find that short works great. Longer might work great. Sometimes just know it's going to be cut off on mobile. I think it's like 40 characters, something like that, 35 characters. Don't hold me to that. And it probably changes based on device and everything else. That's why email is so much fun and not as easy as people make it out to be. I think about Costco's email is so long. I think they literally take the monthly booklet and just put it in an email. It must work because they do it. I hope it works and that they're doing it for that reason and not just, that's just how we've done it. But I will say the days of the once a month newsletter are dead. That much is dead. There's just too much going on that if you're reliant on a single touch once a month, odds are people are going to miss it unless your brand is so strong that people look, oh, it's May 1st. It's June 1st. Scott's newsletter is coming today. But
it's got a lot of value to it or they're not going to look for it.
Exactly. So, you know, oftentimes for us, we don't do anything less than two. Sometimes we say don't do anything less than three emails a month because you just need those touch points. You need those branding touch points. If you ask any email marketer, they'll say you can send as often as you're relevant to your customers. We have one client who sends up to 8 messages a day. Very different market. I tell that to people and they go, oh my God, I wouldn't recommend that for you.
Right.
Right. I mean, Brookstone, there was one holiday season where I think I got 12 emails a day from them. And I literally wrote a blog post going, God, I hope this is working for them because I'm just like back here in morbid curiosity as an email marketer now, not as a consumer. I'm just going, what's going to happen?
For your process. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's something you have to test. If you're at once a month now, get to every other week. If you're at twice a month, test one. It's just, you got to build it up to where, again, email is a slow, steady branding tool that converts really well. But don't forget that branding element. So yeah, if you're sending once a month, you got to send more.
How important is it to make sure it's personalized in a sense and relevant to what they're dealing with? Say you understand the stresses of what's going on or issues or challenges within an industry or vertical or an ideal client market. Do you address those issues and try and address their challenges that they also might be dealing with? Is there some rules as far as how long the content should be? I mean, make the point, of course. When do you put the call of action in? When don't you? Any thoughts on that?
There's the difference right there. If your email is the product, and there are some people out there where it's a newsletter, that's the product. You can be as long and loquacious as you want. I mean, I would still say try to be short, use headlines, use bullets, do something that breaks it up. So there's, what is it called? The dreaded wall of text is something you want to avoid in email, right? And I mean, think about, you know, you're on your phone. You're not going to want to go, oh, let me read everything on your phone. But if you are what I would consider the other 95% of the world, your website is where your content goes. Your longer content, your addressable content. Your job as an email marketer is to get them keyed up enough to go click, let me learn more on the site. Because there is some technology that you can do some shopping inside of email. It's not widely supported yet, so I wouldn't really rely on it. Any sort of conversion mechanism is likely happening on your website, whether it's maybe you're scheduling calls, you're going to be scheduling calls on the website. Is it you're purchasing a product, you're requesting a demo, whatever it is, those actions are occurring on the website. So you got to give them enough in the email to go, yeah, let me get some more information. Yeah, let me go to the site and get deeper involved. Because again, 30% open rate, 40% open rate, that's a good open rate, you know, a good average open rate these days. That still means 60% of your audience isn't reading it. Even of the 30 to 40%, not all of them are going to click through. And if you're leaving everything in the email, some of those opens are probably fake opens anyway, because of the way Apple's mail privacy protection comes into play. So you have to think just the branding value up front, by being there, and then you got to get them in and out and onto your site, where your site is your conversion mechanism.
It's great advice. Good value bomb there. How important is, like with Gmail, they have their own filters. Deliverability is always a problem sometimes. And like you say, you can't trust the open rates, but what should we be not putting in the email? Like I've heard, don't put big graphics in there. Don't put attachments. Don't put PDF. Don't put links. Are there things that we should be doing and not be doing?
Definitely no PDFs, attachments, anything like that. This is not Outlook. You want to have a PDF hosted on your site and you can link to it in the email. So one, you get clicks. You can see the clicks over there, but two, they're on the site and you avoid that. You know, in terms of links, I mean, you could put 58 links in there if you wanted to. I wouldn't recommend it. But the big thing is to not use link shortening in email, especially
Bitly's or whatever. Yeah.
Like Bitly, right. Like do not use a Bitly, bit.ly.whatever, because the bad actors out there have been using that for a lot of years. So the filters know to look for that and go, oh, there's links in there that are Bitly that could go somewhere bad. Kill it, right? Like throw it into spam or not deliver it at all. You could, I mean, there are companies who they're putting video in email these days, right? It's not supported. I think it's like an Apple and a couple other places is not fully supported. I had a client years ago that wanted to do a 1.5-minute video game trailer as a GIF in an email. And I went, please, no. And they went, no, we're going to do it. I'm like, it's going to take forever to load. So really it's the issue of load time, right? I mean, most of us
went fast.
Or in some semblance of broadband, it's not as big of an issue, but you're still talking about if you ever go to a site and it takes more than 5 seconds to load, you're out, right? Yeah. So you got to think about the load time perspective there. So, you know, keeping images, usually with animated GIFs, they're great, but you're talking like 10 frames, right? Don't go more than that because with every frame, the image size gets larger. And then length of, they call it code weight, is another piece where Gmail will, you've probably seen it, where Gmail will truncate or go, hey, this message has been clipped. And I think it's 102 kilobytes of total code. Now, the image sizes themselves won't affect that. It's all about the actual HTML code. But that's why Costco's emails clip every time. It's because their code weight is so big that Gmail goes, nope, you're not going to show up here. So those are some pieces to keep in mind. Deliverability is a whole different animal. You know, yes. Gmail has their filters. AOL is still a thing, believe it or not, but Yahoo has their filters. Everybody has their own filters, rules.
Is there a way to get through deliverability? Like we have on our applications that we use, we have a transactional, we can send what we call a transactional email. Mm-hmm. And so if they bought something, purchased something, and it'll go through, it'll get into their box, but it needs to be a transactional email.
This episode is sponsored in part by Rainmaker Digital Solutions, featuring ActiveCampaign. Looking to drive growth with customer experience automation?
ActiveCampaign, the number one marketing automation platform for e-commerce, B2C and B2B companies, gives you the email marketing, marketing automation, and CRM tools you need to create incredible customer experiences. ActiveCampaign is the platform we use to reach, nurture, convert, and grow our business, and you can use it to grow yours. You can see why 150,000 plus businesses like yours choose ActiveCampaign to help them grow and become preferred in the markets they serve. You can also start your free trial by visiting our website and clicking on the ActiveCampaign trial link. As a bonus, we'll also give you a digital copy of my book, Becoming Preferred, How to Outsell the Competition. And in the interest of full disclosure, I am a shareholder in the company. And now back to my conversation with Scott Cohen. You wrote an article on this. I was reading an article you'd written on it, or a post on DMARC. And we hit some laws, I think back in February, where everybody said you have to have, explain that a little bit, just, you know, in a layman's way, I suppose, so we can all understand it.
Yeah, I'm not a deliverability guy, so I will hope not to butcher this explanation. But at a very high level, there's three layers of protocol that have been in email. Honestly, DMARC's been around for a long time, but you have SPF. I always call it like the good, better, best. You have domain keys or DKIM. You may have heard of that one. And then there's DMARC. So really what they all do at a very high level is, like, when you use like a MailChimp or a Klaviyo or any of these providers, you're essentially giving them a subdomain of your website, right, and saying, you can send mail on my behalf. What these protocols do is tell the filters, the Gmails, the Yahoos of the world, this is coming from me, so please let it through. So SPF and DKIM have been requirements for a while. In February, Gmail and Yahoo made DMARC a requirement. And the specific with DMARC is essentially protects your brand from being spoofed. So like the base level, they call it P equals none. It's reporting only, essentially, is what you can think about and go, hey, who's trying to mail is me? And the bigger the company you are, the more people are trying to pretend to be you. And then you can get it to where there's quarantine, where it stops it for a while. And then there's reject, which basically tells Gmail and Yahoo and all these others, if it doesn't look like me in this specific way, don't let it through. And so it's a good thing, right? It's a good thing to go, hey, you're protecting your brand. Because if you are, you know, the Targets and Walmarts and whatever the world, how many times have I gotten a Yeti free cooler email in my spam folder, right? Because somebody's always trying to be somebody else to get information. So those are why those came into place. DMARC's been around almost, I want to say it's almost 10 years now. So it's about time that has come through. So we saw an influx of, hey, could you help us make sure this gets set up? Could you help us make sure this gets set up? So those are what I like to call the initial bouncer getting into the building. And then you have your sender reputation, which is the buildup of, I've been sending good email, engagement is good with opens and clicks, people aren't marking me as spam. It's sort of this, what's the old adage? You know, you can spend 10,000 tweets building a reputation and one tweet destroying it. That was Scott Stratton wrote that years ago. There's always been some sort of iteration of that. But that's kind of what sender reputation is. It's like an up and down, and things can be good. And then Microsoft, which I consider a four-letter word when it comes to deliverability, is their own thing in terms of, like, they have their filters and how they handle stuff. Right. Gmail has their own filters and feedback. There's a whole, if you really want the details, I can send you to three different deliverability people, but that's the high level.
That was good explanation, actually. Warming up. I'm starting to see, hey, warm up the mailbox first. So you've got a campaign, you've got an idea. Hey, you can start to warm up, because the filters look at that, or the ISPs look at that and go, hey, wait a minute, we never heard from you. Now you're sending out all kinds of mails. Is that an important criteria? Something we need to pay attention to?
For sure. Yeah. So really, if you think about it, some of this is reactionary from what spammers do, right? So spammers will go out, and to show my age, they'll paper the market square with their email and send millions and millions. And then once they get caught, they move over to a new IP address, right? So they move over to a new IP address, they might move over to a new domain, things like that. So really what happens is, if you have, let's just say you've been building a list on one platform and you have 100,000 people on your list, let's say you mail every day, but you want to move over, like you're moving up to a different platform that'll have a fresh subdomain for you. Because if you're on a new platform, odds are you'll have a new IP address, right? If you go from zero to 100,000 a day, like overnight, the service providers, the ISPs, will go out and go, wait, to your, you said earlier, who is this guy?
Yeah.
What's he doing? Do we have a spammer here? So what you have to do is take, and literally some of our warm-up plans have started with 100 people in day one. So you take 100 of your most active people. You're using your engagement to build your reputation on your new ISP or your new IP address, right? So you use those people to kind of build up engagement slowly but surely, where it's literally like 100 today, could be 200 tomorrow. Oh, too much, back off a little bit. Like it's a 4 to 6, sometime depending on the size of your list, could be an 8-week process, right? Where you're building up to where you're finally moving everything over. And where you start there, start small, you move over your automations too. Like let's say you have a big welcome program that is for new subscribers. Those are your highest engaged programs. Your cart abandon is going to be one of your highest engaged programs. You move those over as well and start having those fill in the volume, right? Because it's a volume play. And as your volume is more reputable, it builds up your overall reputation and then you can go full force.
Oh, that's interesting. No, that's a good insight. A lot of businesses, they're weighing their marketing dollars. They're looking at their marketing dollars. And with the rise of paid social media, we're seeing it, more platforms coming on all the time. Many businesses kind of tend to overlook the potential role of email marketing, or, hey, we need to move on. How do you demonstrate the essential role of email marketing in business growth, especially when you're comparing it to social media?
There's always the ROI argument, right? I think it's been anywhere between 36 and $45 for every dollar you spend is your ROI. When I worked at Purple, it was $430. But keep in mind, I sold a $4,000 mattress, so it made it look a lot easier. So, you know, your cost is going to be significantly less per thousand, right? You know, CPMs are going to be so much lower on email, but the channels have to work together because email is not, I don't view it as a lead gen channel. It is a lead conversion channel. So to get people to sign up for your list, you do need that element of maybe it's paid social outreach. They work together, right? So then you want to
do this.
Right. So like paid social will drive traffic to the website for you to collect email addresses. Email can then be used if you're building a community on one of these channels or multiple channels. Email can be used in the other way to drive folks. Hey, they signed up. Now here's the community angle. Go join the community. So I'm an email guy, but none of these channels act in a vacuum. They all work together. And so what you don't want to have happen on the paid social side or any of these paid channels is you're spending all this money hoping they buy. Like, obviously, you hope they buy right away. But if you, like, one of your KPIs needs to be email address collection, because what will happen is if you're not getting the email address and then they don't buy, you're just throwing money at it, right? You're just throwing money at it. But if you get them to sign up for something, then at least you have some sort of acquisition there that then your email channel can help them push them over the edge to that purchase.
That's great insights there. I'm starting to read some things around cookieless world in marketing. We're starting to see that more and more all the time. And it poses a challenge for many digital channels, obviously. How do you see email marketing campaigns evolving to remain effective in that new landscape?
I don't think cookies are going to go away. I just think free cookies are going to go away. That's just my thinking, is that Google's going to sit on the data and be like, oh, you want access to it? We still have it. Money, please. You need to pay me for this. Like, I think it's going to be a revenue channel for them. It's going to have to be, right? Search is however much percentage, I mean, ungodly percentage of their business, but it's going to be a revenue stream. Why would they get rid of it? Why wouldn't they just put it behind a paywall? That's what I'm thinking is going to happen. Maybe wrong, maybe right. I don't know. But that goes back to my whole thing of just get them on the list. Because what's going to happen is with iOS 17, they're starting to strip out like platform-specific UTM parameters, right? So, you know, I think Facebook's been affected. Some of the email providers have HubSpot-specific UTMs are being stripped out. I think Marketo, possibly MailChimp, some of those specific ones. But the Google-specific ones, your UTM campaign, UTM content, those things are still there. So if you set up your links correctly, you will still have tracking at that level. And you'll still have the ability to see the waterfall and see where their activity is going. Because you have that incoming tracking. So get them on the list. I mean, it's that, you know, don't rely on third party to tell you everything. It's first party data. And that's where email is. Email is a first party data channel.
Well, they're coming to you for a reason, which begs the next question, really a natural transition. You got into copywriting, which is, to me, like you said, it's an art and a science. So you never know when a hit's going to be a hit song or when it's not. You don't know. You just keep producing. Who should be writing their own emails? Who shouldn't be? When's the time to, hey, we need a copywriter? And in today's marketplace, I'm sure you get asked that. I'll tell you, you know, these small businesses don't have $100 million budgets, big marketing teams. You work some major, major brands. People can check out your background, which we'll have in the show notes. So you've worked with some great brands that have some great dollars behind them in order to put into that. Where's a good place to start? so that, hey, I want to attack this myself, or should we be fighting copywriter, or what's the role of AI or chat coming in and all the different, there's, it seems like everybody's got one now. Unpack that one for us.
Wow. ChatGPT, I think, is a great starter. Or Claude, or I don't know, what are the other ones these days? But, and probably between the time we're talking and the time this launches, there'll be another one that comes out.
Jasper and Right Sonic.
Oh, there's a ton of them. So yeah. I would say, unless you have your own AI machine learning engine only learning you, it will not be able to replicate the voice you want. That's my caveat. It is a starting point. I mean, I've done it where I go, I just need 10 subject line ideas, right? And I've gone and used them. And actually, these aren't bad. Let me take that and put it in our voice, right? So that's something that they're value for sure. I mean, writer's block is the worst when you just don't know how to write, how you want to get started. The blank page is the worst. So there's nothing that says you can't use it for that, but don't fall for the it's good enough without at least reading it yourself. So that's the danger I find there. There's some decent, I mean, I would say younger copywriters, you may find them on Fiverr or Upwork or whatever. That might be enough, right? I mean, if you don't have a huge budget, but you know your business better than anybody does. So anybody you work with, whether it's, you know, an agency, whether it's a freelancer, anything like that, there's going to be a learning curve. There has to be. Even the best writers out there will go, okay, I'm going to give you a draft. Now you got to help me tweak it, right? I mean, when we work with our clients, you got to give us a copy outline at least. What do you want to talk about? What should we avoid? You know, don't say it this way, don't say it that way, and have the grace to go, I know you guys are learning, because copy is the hardest thing to get the voice. When I was a true copywriter on the brand side, we worked with an agency and I had to rewrite 75% of their stuff, but it was, editing is so much easier than writing from scratch. So, right. You know, I had a starting point that went, I'm going to take that and put it in our voice. So those are the things you're going to have to realize, is that it's not going to be a solution out of the box. You're going to have patience and grace to figure out that anybody you hire, at least for a couple months, we'll need some time to figure out how you want to write it, unless your brand guidelines and copy examples are so good that they can mimic it from day one. But odds are that's not what you're set up for.
Well, like you say, it's the tortoise and the hare. It's taking time to nurture that relationship and build upon that, right? We hear about storytelling. We hear about how to structure our messaging, if you will. How important is it to make it all about them and their issues versus, I see a lot of emails and people come telling all about how wonderful they are. It's like when you go to a website, most of the websites are brochures. Like, here's how great we are. We're number one because, and it's got nothing to do with the client. You know, I lose interest in less than 10 seconds, where if it's about me, I'm going to read it. So do you have a formula when you approach an email from a copywriting point of view and tailoring it to that individual and their needs? Is there some rules that we should be paying attention to?
Wow, the great two-word answer. It depends, right? So what are you delivering? I think about like a first welcome email, for example. If you are getting people to sign up for an offer, give us your email address, we'll send you 10% off. Your first email should have 10% off, right? It should deliver that offer. So you should be delivering what's expected. You can get into the values and the problems. I think it has to play a role in some way. You have to be able to speak the language of the people seeking out your solution.
Right.
Because otherwise, why are you there? You know, other than just to make money, why are you there? And I'm not saying it's not easy to remove you from the situation, because you know what value you bring, you know what solution you're bringing, but you're not speaking the language to get them to understand, okay, not only do we have a solution for you, but we understand why you need the solution. So sometimes it's always a solution in search of a problem, is how I like to say it. So how do you get to the problem statement? And that's where you have to start. And sometimes if you have a sale, just say it's a sale and get out. Right? You don't have to wax philosophical with everything you do. But when you're doing like an education piece, when you're doing a content piece, when you're doing a product feature, maybe it's a new product. Hey, this is a new product. Here's what it's designed to solve. Here's why you should look at it, right? But it's, what is the goal of the email?
Yeah, there's times to educate. Like we try and train our clients to identify, where are we going? Who are you going after? Identify, engage, get them engaged, then educate, and then convert. And so sometimes we just send out pure content, like pure value. Hey, enjoy. Here's your content. And then 2 days later, hey, we want to invite you to something. So it's that community. It's that, you know, communities are a big deal. It's the full measure of that, not just here's how great our product is, here's a greater product. Because people, I think, are getting jaded by, hey, last one, I've only got 3 seats left. We know all the tricks, right? If people see the tricks, which brings up the question of authenticity and how we should be revealing. And we want our emails to be authentic. If we screwed up or we messed up on something, let them know. Hey, we screwed up. Yep. here's what we did to fix it, without BSing them, right? Without going through that process. Yeah. Let me ask you this. And so copywriting is a big one. And like you say, you can use different mediums. I think if you're not a great copywriter, you already know. So there's lots of sources for some. And again, we'll have the links to you folks on the website as well. As a seasoned expert in email and SMS marketing, what do you believe are the most pressing challenges and opportunities that businesses will face in, say, the next 3 to 5 years? And how can they best prepare to navigate and capitalize on those changes? Where do you see it going?
Well, the AI piece is going to be interesting, not just for the copy piece, but the speed to market for testing and personalization is going to be an interesting thing to watch. So I wrote on LinkedIn several months ago. I was at a conference back in December, and a brand was presenting that they had essentially built and trained their own AI engine. And they had, as a result of that, were able to do 750 versions of their Black Friday messaging.
Wow.
By base. And so what's going to happen from email, and I expect a certain, I mean, SMS is very short form, you know, it'll be interesting to see where costs go, because you have to pay your platform costs and then your vendor fees, right? I mean, literally half the cost is paying Verizon to let it through. But I see on the AI side, we're going to get beyond building emails top to bottom from scratch every time, right? Or you have a basic level template and you're putting it in. What's going to happen is there's going to be a certain level of prompt engineering that's going to go on. But what also is going to happen is that we're going to build master templates with content blocks out of a content library. And so I think a lot of the work is going to be done up front. And then you're going to be training your engine to decide what's the best pieces of content for that individual getting that email that day. So we're not there yet. But I think that you talked about 5 years from now, we could be there 5 years from now, where you go, hey, we have this huge library, you get to pick from it and go, okay, with this person, we're going to take this block and we're going to use AI to change it out a bit.
Yep.
But some of the things we're calling AI have been around for, especially in email, been around for a while, right? Send time optimization has been around for, I don't know, 5, 6, 10 years, which is still great. The CDPs of the world, the customer data platforms of the world, have been talking about next best channel for the last 4 or 5 years, where you get to a certain point and the engine will go, oh, this person will get an SMS, this person will get an email, this person will get both, this person will randomly get a push message because they interact with the app more than anything else. So they've been claiming that. How far along we really are there, I don't know. But those are the pieces that I see coming down the pipe, that AI is going to be the biggest disruption in terms of an email marketer's day-to-day. So the marketers that embrace AI as part of their job will keep their jobs. Marketers that disregard AI will lose their jobs to somebody who has embraced AI. I don't think AI is going to replace people altogether, at least not for the companies that are making smart decisions, because there has to be a human. Yeah, humans have to be at the helm, right? Because the language learning isn't there yet to fully replace that human voice. But that, I think that's going to be the biggest thing. Really, if I think about overall strategy for email, not a lot has changed in the 15 plus years I've been doing this. I always look at a life cycle and go, where are the key moments and where can email come in? And like I said, fill the holes in the bucket with the fingers, right? Those are the big things, like, oh, it's a first hand raise for a subscription. They need a welcome. Oh, their first hand raise has come in because they filled a cart and we got their email. Okay, we need a checkout abandoned situation. Sometimes your first interaction with them, your known interaction with them, is they've made a purchase. Now what? You can't just send an order confirmation, shipping confirmation. It's got to be some sort of, hey, you know nothing about us. Maybe we should make you feel better about the money you just spent. So there's a lot of those pieces that still need to happen.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Well, and you brought up an interesting point. Email marketing is expected to see a transition into, we're starting to see more colorful and glamorous designs, along with the integration of animations, typography. How can businesses adapt their email marketing strategies to embrace these design trends, but ensure that their content remains effective and impactful?
Well, I mean, still in terms of best practices, you shouldn't be using image only in email, right? So you have to think about accessibility is a big thing, right? So if you're using images only, even with the best alt text behind it, you're going to have people who are losing a big chunk of the messaging, right? So there's brands out there where everything's an image. The whole email is one image and you go, great, it's clickable, but what happens if they can't see the image for some reason? What happens if they're using Outlook and they're blocking images by default? You lose that whole thing. So it's always been about a balance of images and text, where the text is actually coded rather than being inside the imagery, right? So images are supposed to draw the eye. Imagery is supposed to bring people into the email, but you're still talking about text driving important conversion. Buttons, even buttons are supposed to be code, like we call them pixel perfect, or they can get around things. They have to be coded. So those are the pieces, the actual engagement pieces need to be coded so that you don't lose that piece. So it's the brand. I mean, the brand needs to come through, right? Like you don't necessarily need your email to match exactly what your website looks like, because email and the website are different. Like if you showed a web coder what email code looks like, their head just explodes because we're still using tables. And they go, what? You're using tables? Yeah, welcome to sending to Outlook. But it can't be a jarring experience. So, you know, I was talking with somebody who went, what if I just send plain text right away? And I went, how would you like it if you went to a site that was this beautiful site, and then you submitted information and you got a really basic text-based message from the brand? Would you feel good about it? Not necessarily. Now, plain text, I think I said earlier, can be very disruptive, especially, you know, at big time orders, high volume, things like that. I've seen it be really successful, but the brand still needs to be there in everything you do. So I think just to wrap up there, like, don't use images for the sake of using images. Make sure they're smart and they draw people in, they drive people to that call to action, whatever it might be. And then make sure that you don't lose track of the branding in the process.
Oh, sounds good. Hey, well, let's do a plug. You just got appointed CEO of Inbox Army. Yeah. Congratulations. I know it happened this
month.
Thank
you.
Oh, good for you. And I know you had been there before, and people check you out, they'll see your background for sure, and definitely an award winner. Give us a plug for Inbox Army. Who are we for? Who can we help? And what do we do that's amazing?
Yeah, Inbox Army, we are a full service email marketing agency. So as I like to say, if it involves email, we do it. Everything from template design to fully managing your programs. We work with really anybody that can come in. Right? So we work with the companies that are what we call emerging businesses, where they're a step above startup and doing some great stuff, all the way to enterprise level customers. So if you need help executing your vision of your business and want somebody to build a great email program for you, or take an existing email program and take it to the next level, we're your guys. You can check us out, inboxarmy.com. Simple as that.
And we'll have all those details and how people can reach you and find you in your show notes. Scott Cohen, this was a pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing some of your insights, your wisdom, and some of the frameworks that work well. We can always improve our effectiveness, all in an effort to help us become the preferred providers of what we do and who we serve. So Scott, thanks for today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for having me.
This podcast is created and associated with Summit Media. My executive producer is Beth Smith, and director of research, Tori Smith. The fee for the show is that you share it with friends when you find something useful or interesting. This podcast is subject to copyright by Summit Media.
Goodbye.